Just a quick warning, because we always give a quick warning at the beginnings and we don't really know how to start the episodes without giving a quick warning, because where would the music go and what would we say? But we're going to be talking about the album art today. So I don't know. Stuff might come up. I have stuff to say about a war. I mean, not much. Bad relationship dynamics, you know, the huge. So brace yourselves, I guess.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of A Hopeless Endeavor, a Joanna Newsom lyrical podcast. Today, we're not actually talking about lyrics at all. We're diving into the Have One On Me cover art. Again, because this is part two. That's what we're doing an intro for. So welcome back to that. Again, we try our best. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, you guys. I'm Nikki. That's Sam.
Oh, yeah, I'm Sam. I added the lyrical podcast part and then lost the rest of the script.
Whatever. It's fine. You guys get the gist. Welcome back for part two. It'd be so weird for someone to tune into part two of a discussion on album art without having listened to part one. So, like, they know what's going on. It's fine.
Yeah.
All right. I hope you guys enjoy part two. We speculate wildly. And
as per usual. As per usual.
We'll see you next week with Divers.
Crazy.
Crazy. Bye.
Bye. Enjoy.
So I was reading this excellent interview that I somehow hadn't read before today, where Roy Harper, who is obviously like a well-known musician, but one of Joanna Newsom's favorite ever musicians, Roy Harper was for some reason interviewing Joanna. And so their conversation was super cool because to me, at least, it felt like Joanna was a bit less like guarded than she would normally be, because she was just talking to someone who has given her like a ton of inspiration and for whom she has a ton of respect. Mm-hmm. And I thought that just, I don't know, the way they were talking was super moving to me. But I found this quote, which I think is really interesting, where she talks specifically about the album art on Have One On Me. So Roy Harper asks her, "How much of a part do you think your personal beauty plays in your vision of life?" Which, like, I don't even know how.
That's a really interesting question, because it evokes not only like the privilege, but the perspective. Good question. Okay. And her response was?
Her response is like such an eloquent, of course it is. But okay. So she says, "Well, Roy, the phrasing of your question makes it seem like that beauty thing is a given, which is nice of you, although not necessarily the consensus." Shush, Joanna, you're beautiful, obviously. Okay. "Certain aspects of physical appearance are mutable, boiling down to mere decisions. And to the extent that those decisions operate as elements of an artistic project, I consider them valuable. All my three record covers depicted me in an allegorical setting. So embroidered on the first album cover, painted on the second, and then photographed on the third. In each case, there are factors relating to physical appearance that can be tempered to underscore the spirit of the album and the identity of its narrator. The photo on the cover of Have One On Me was modeled after typical Orientalist fantasy figure iconography, like an odalisk or a Venus in furs, a sort of cartoonish amalgamation of feminine signifiers stylized to illustrate the Lacanian idea that woman is a symptom of man. Annabelle Mayron, the photographer, used black and white film that the artist Becca Mann later hand-tinted over with watercolors. The idea was to mock up a shabby 1920s Parisian studio with an absinthe-dulled lady posing on a divan in bits of old drapery fabric, and then paint over the resulting tableau into some idealized technicolor hedonistic fantasy set. The specifically female, earthbound, corporeal and decadent character in that album art reflects the character of those songs' narrator, as well of the as well as the idea of feminine self-diminishment. That was a definite application of the idea of beauty. Sorry, I don't know whether that specific application could have any reason to occur again for me creatively. I have no idea who the narrator of my next record will be and whether there will be a clear physical embodiment of that character, which, spoiler alert, we know there wasn't.
And that's so cool to look forward. It's also just really interesting to think of how that representation has changed over the years from the embroidered milk-eyed mender to Have One On Me. And then as we move forward into Divers, which has absolutely no physical representation of her on the album at all. There is the music video where she appears in like a godlike way. But that's really, really cool.
Right? I thought that was so fucking cool. There were like 50 parts in there that I was like, oh my God, how have I not seen this before?
And you know what I really like too and makes me proud of us is that we've tried to very consistently refer to the narrator of these albums versus the artist.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that she is doing the same thing just makes me go, cool.
I love the idea that they were going for this like 1920s Parisian studio look with a specifically absinthe-dolled lady. So she's supposed to be like sort of hazy and drunk looking. And then like that being the black and white representation, and then that resulting in this, as she says, idealized technicolor hedonistic fantasy set. Like it's all sort of like a show. And there are like tons of places in interviews where she describes this album as being earthy and earthbound and and stuff like that. So I thought that was important to bring up here because we get this, we're seeing, I don't want to say like more of her body because that makes it sound like I'm commenting on like how revealingly she's dressed or something, which is not my intention here. But I mean,
she's
like,
not even really. Like, you can't.
But you see, like, her legs are not visible, for example, in the East. So, like, you see literally more of her body in that.
Sure. Just
it's more in,
like,
the frame.
Surface area.
Exactly. Like, it's her whole body is there represented rather than, like, on Milk-Eyed Mender, it's literally her face that's just, like, cut out, or not cut out, but, like, embroidered into this fabric. On East, we see her, I think, pretty much from the waist up. And then here we see her whole body. It's still a little hidden behind, like, just, well, I guess it's not really hidden.
You can't really see her left hand and her right foot.
Yeah.
But you can see, like, the general shape.
Yeah.
Of her body and that she is a person for sure.
Yeah. Which I think is just, it goes right hand in hand with this sort of like sexuality that we've talked about and seen on Have One On Me and the way in which, at least my interpretation is that she gets used for her body and is valued only because of, or maybe not only because of her body, but in large part because of the role that she can play in satisfying the narrator's partner. And this idea of feminine self-diminishment that she references in that quote too, I thought was super interesting because of this very theme and like the idea that like you play down the parts that are unpalatable to the man in question in order to be like loved or accepted or whatever the case may be.
And to that note of playing things down too, like it is incredibly interesting to me that the outfit that she herself is wearing is not especially interesting. Like she is, it's a strapless dress. It has two tones, maybe like a gray color and black. She has like a small headband on, but like compared to everything else, there it's not especially interesting in any way.
Yeah.
Even the wine glass she's drinking out of is just like a stemless, clear glass. It's hard to see if there's anything in it, like maybe some white wine at the bottom.
I can't tell. Yeah. I think it might be empty. Oh, you're right, though. I see.
Also
I see
be like empty. Yeah, because you can see her thumb holding it from the other side, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting.
It's also, you can see on the right side, because I keep looking at this as you're talking, right to the left, so the right of the couch. Get your eyes to follow down the, I mean, I hope people are looking at this image as we're talking, otherwise this is so boring. The peacock feathers, you can see like the actual legs and fabric of the couch.
It's
legs and then like a striped fabric with some beveled details there. And then, you know what I'm really curious about? So if your eye keeps moving towards the left, you see the fawn, you see like the leopard hat with the jewelry all over the antlers of, I guess it's not a fawn, of this creature. And then there's like something silver behind it that looks like a belt, or it reminds me of like a cowboy hat. I feel like it's something Dolly Parton would wear.
I don't know what that is. I really can't. My eyes aren't understanding it.
No. I'm not sure either, but another texture.
Yeah, another texture for sure. What do you make of the expression on her face? How would you describe it? Like,
I mean, the eye contact is incredible.
She is looking right at us.
Right into your eyes. It's almost challenging.
Yeah.
Like, it's almost... It's really interesting in the context of the whole picture that she is giving such direct eye contact, because it's hard to keep looking only at her when there's so much else going on.
Yeah. But she's sort of demanding that attention, though. Like, she, like, her eyes are so intense. But yet, at the same time, they are dulled in the way that she's describing. Like, they do look a little bit not present. Like, they look a little drunk to me.
Yeah, and I guess that goes just along with, like, even her blush as it goes into her hair is quite blurry.
Yeah.
Have you spent any time looking at the tapestry? Like, what the fuck is going on?
I literally ignored the tapestry, even though it's, like, the biggest part of the album art on purpose, because I was like, I have no idea where to even start. I don't know what to do with this.
So there's, like, a woman in the middle who has... would appear to be like two young children beside her.
Yeah.
One of the children is on the ground. The other one appears to be floating in midair. Because the one who I'm assuming is the mother is holding a bird in her right hand.
Yeah.
And then is like holding the hand, I'm assuming, of the child on the ground. And then this child is not being held.
Yeah, like,
unless there's
floating.
A ledge, the kid's floating. And it's got, like, those weird chunky baby legs. It's like before people knew how to draw people. And they're all in front of a bird cage. There's, like, a bald guy at the bottom letting out some, like, really interesting-looking birds.
Like, it looks like he's kneeling at her feet, kind of, huh?
It does. I tried to Google reverse image search, and I didn't get anything.
Didn't work. Maybe it's because the colors on this are so different.
Yeah.
Because it must have been done by Becca Mann, too. Yeah, so that guy is letting out birds from a birdcage, looking up at her. I'm not sure where he's looking exactly. But those are really weird and interesting looking birds. And then...
it almost looked like he's looking past them.
Yeah.
To whatever the structure is behind them.
Yeah. Which is sort of disconcerting.
Like, it is. And then there's like a border.
Oh, there's a person in there. In that little structure, right?
Is there? There is! Oh, I have to look at the closer up. It's really hard to see on the actual cover.
I think it's really hard to see too, even on this high res version. I think the person in the picture. So, okay. I'm following the guy who's kneeling down. We're talking about the tapestry in the background of Heaven on Me album yes. right now. Within that picture, there's a guy who's kneeling down. The bottom left of that tapestry looks like he's looking up at this structure in the background, which looks like a gazebo type thing with two stories. Yeah. And then it looks like there's like somebody who's looking up to the sky and holding either like a hunting arrow thing or a mm-hmm. telescope or something, but looking upwards.
Yes. And it looks like that the baby who's on the ground, who isn't floating in midair, might also be holding something.
Yes.
But like that's really obscured too.
I don't know what that is. It's like a long stick with an X at the end of it, but I don't know.
Oh, you know what it could be? Oh, I always forget the words for those. The things that spin. It's not a fan. It's a...
Oh, a pinwheel.
A pinwheel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Totally. Yeah, like a little toy of some kind. Yeah.
And then there's these birds on like the bridge behind them.
Yeah. So there must be water underneath that bridge.
Yeah. That's what I would guess, too. There's three birds, at least. There might be little baby ones at their feet, too, but that's hard to tell.
It is interesting that the woman here is, I think, being depicted as a mother. Like
that's the vibe that I get.
Yeah, which is interesting in the context of Have One on Me and then, like, contrasted with what Joanna is doing in this picture, which is like stereotypically contrasted to like our archetype or understanding of what a mother is, which in our sexist culture is like not a sexual being, and like the idea of being a mother is very much in contrast culturally speaking with being a sexual being, which is why people like are so harsh about moms ever like mm-hmm. having any sort of identity outside of motherhood. But anyways, just that contrast I find potentially interesting.
I wish I knew more about this tapestry.
Me too. I get an Eastern sort of vibe from it, like just in terms of its style, but I don't know if that's me totally making it up. I know nothing about Eastern art, so...
I know nothing about art in general. Yeah, wow, you can buy so many different Joanna Newsom tapestries, though. I had no idea. There's a really cool monkey and bear one.
Ooh, I want it.
Anyway.
So another note I have. So in that Roy Harper interview thing, she had described it as being... As the album art trying to invoke either like a odalisque imagery or Venus in Furs imagery. And so I looked up Venus in Furs just because I'm like much less familiar with what that is as a concept. Mm-hmm. And I think probably what she's referring to here is this novella by the Austrian author Leopold van Sacher-Masoch. I don't know how to say his name. But basically... I don't know. From what I got, it's that there's this man who like worships this woman, which I thought when you were describing like the guy in the tapestry behind her mm-hmm. being like lower than the woman, I was thinking like maybe there is some sort of like mutual like lionization or something. So, Venus and Furs. Concerns a man who dreams of speaking to Venus about love while she wears furs. So basically, this guy, Severin, is so infatuated with this woman, Wanda, that he asks to be her slave, which again is interesting with like the odalisque imagery, mm-hmm. just because odalisques are sometimes taken to be sex slaves. And this guy encourages the woman to treat him in progressively more degrading ways. At first, Wanda does not understand or accede to the request, but after humoring the guy a bit, she finds the advantages of the method to be interesting and enthusiastically embraces the idea, but at the same time, she hates the guy for allowing her to like degrade him in those kinds of ways. But I thought it was interesting because at the end, the relationship arrives at a crisis when Wanda meets a man to whom she would like to submit. At the end of the book, the guy, humiliated by Wanda's new lover, loses the desire to submit. He says of Wanda, "That woman, as nature has created her, and man at present is educating her, is man's enemy. She can only be his slave or his despot, but never his companion. This she can become only when she has the same rights as he and is his equal in education and work." So I wasn't sure how relevant that was, or if she was just going for the imagery when she invoked the Venus and Furs reference, but I'm not sure.
Well, that's really interesting too. Especially because I feel like so much of the album talks about that distinction between, I mean, just like East did, women's roles and men's roles. But I don't know. I still feel like this cover is kind of in opposition of that.
In opposition to what, sorry?
To just like those traditional roles.
Interesting.
Because like here we have someone who, you know, presumably it's the middle of the day. She's doing what she wants.
She is doing what she wants. So what you're saying is bringing to mind for me this quote from the photographer, Annabelle Miron, where she writes about Joanna. She combines strength and femininity in a way that I find incredibly inspiring. Mm-hmm. There is something about her that turns on my mind and makes me come up with good ideas. She is at once nostalgic and modern. When we made the album photos, I tried to create an environment that fit the character she is singing about on her record, a character that I think of as being decadent and self-reflective. Mm-hmm. Some of the photos are very intimate feeling, and others have a heavily stylized visual narrative, which to my mind is in keeping with the music. So, like, what you were saying there was just that, like, look, she's, like, it's not a traditional depiction of, like, what womanhood is to, like, have her be with a cup of emptied alcohol, maybe in the middle of the day, lounging on this chair with, like, the most decadent shit all around her. Like, that, there is a strength in that that isn't, it's not part of the traditional gender roles.
It's not, and it speaks to very much someone who is not easy to, like, it very much gives me does not suffice vibes. I feel like if I were to think of something for the beginning of the album, it wouldn't be this.
Right.
I know you mentioned the use of beds in all of these images a lot earlier too, and that is incredibly interesting to me too, specifically because we've talked so much about sleep and the partner and, you know, his role in the last couple albums, that she is now getting a chance to lay down. Like, I just love the idea that, like, does not suffice has happened. These are all the things she's brought with her. And, like, it's over.
Yeah.
And this is where she is. And it seems like a pretty chill place to be.
That's interesting. I think my interpretation is a little bit more, like, cynical in that it feels to me like it, like, I agree with the fact that, like, it is inspiring. She is doing whatever the fuck she wants. She's obviously loaded, too, because people don't just have this, like, decadent shit in their life. Like, most people don't, because most people don't have the resources to get all this shit. So I agree that there is that aspect going on. But I also get this, like, sad vibe from it where it's, like, this old tired narrative of, like, women have to be sexual in order to, like, survive and be given any attention or, like, loved in this society. And that, like, I get this vibe here that she's, like, doing the gender role, that she has to, like, drink in order to, like, like do it properly, like, right, to like dull her faculties so that she doesn't need to be thinking and like questioning whether or not she's actually happy in this, that she can just like dull her senses enough and like sort of detach from her body in a way that gives me this old vibe that we got with Monkey and Bear, where it's like, my body is just being used for my body. Like, you don't actually care about my personality. And I get the vibe that the narrator, or like the depiction of her on the cover of this album is like, yeah, it's sad to me. She's like trying to figure out a way to cope with being this body.
Just like the most real thing ever spoken, my God. But also like really interesting as like a product of all of these expectations. I totally get that too.
But it's not clear. And the idea that she would have all this shit out because she left after Does Not Suffice is one that I hadn't considered. And like, I like that better. In that, like, it makes me happier for the person who we're seeing on the cover.
I mean, I guess it depends where she's looking to live. Because if you're looking in Vancouver and you have all of this shit, you're never going to find an apartment.
You're fucked.
That fits it all.
Okay, so I told Sam this already, but for the rest of you, when I was looking for that fucking quote that like said, this is all her shit that she just dragged into her living room. Yeah. I was like, okay, maybe the reason I can't find it in text online is because it's actually just like in an audio interview. And the longest audio interview that I know about that Joanna's done is the Marc Maron interview.
Mm.
So I listened to that whole thing, which I love everything Joanna says in it. It just, Maron gets on my nerves a little bit. But
as we were talking about Marc Maron today, who is neither of our favorite people, it made me think so much of the line, with your sugar lips and guitars and pens. I was just like, that guy.
That guy. Okay. And so I there was one part of it, and I forget what it says now, but is it called transcribed? Yeah, I guess I transcribed word for word this one part because she was talking about Have It On Me. So first of all, this first part is just me paraphrasing what she was saying here, but she says, each narrator of the albums is some stylized, exaggerated version of myself. The person shown on the album covers is meant to illustrate that in some way, I just stopped writing there, so that in some way something, but a different archetypal identity is being depicted in each of the album covers. Okay, now here's the direct quote where I like rewound it a million times to like get exactly what she says. So she says, Have It On Me is more of like the maiden, archetypically speaking, and like it is much more physical, much more... The songs speak a lot more to very sort of physical life stuff, like drinking and eating and like, you know, being a woman. There's obviously more like romantic stuff on that record and more just sort of like, and then Marc Maron fucking interrupts her to talk about how the album is more accessible. And so then she answers, it's a much earthier record all around. And it's more grounded, more earthy, more grounded in the body. And then Marc Maron interrupts her again to say that there are more hooks in the songs. So I just wanted to read that part because I thought it was interesting in that she's talking about the depiction of the narrator on the cover as being this like earthy, corporal depiction. But also I wish you could keep talking. No, I love
that you brought that up again because you had mentioned it earlier and I wanted to say like all of the pieces that she surrounded herself with are themselves very earthy too, right? Like
yeah.
We have the peacocks, we have the fawns, we have the hands, we have the crystals. There's all of these fabrics that are made from fibers of the earth.
Oh, that's such a great point, Sam. I didn't even think of that.
You know, like the furniture is wood.
Yeah.
Like the carpet is woven, I'm assuming of like wool or something. Like the ottoman. Oh, you know what I just noticed, Nikki?
What?
Look at the fucking, I wonder if you can see it Oh my God.
Well, I'm so
I wonder if you can see. So let's go to our super. Oh, I closed it.
High res.
High res. Look at the fucking faces on the ottoman. What does that remind you of?
Oh my God. Yes. The chairs in the east cover.
Exactly.
Oh my God. I didn't notice that before. Are those?
They look like lions.
They do look like, or like maybe leopards because of the leopard print.
Maybe, probably leopards, which, you know, doesn't really mean anything because I lost my mind a few months ago when, my God, why can't I think of his name now? The
Benjamin
artist
Veerling?
Benjamin Veerling posted a picture with the east chair. And I was like, that's it. This is a portrait for her. Here's the new album. We're going. We're going back to East. And then, no, it was a portrait of someone else. It was probably belongs to him in his studio.
But it totally.
That's a really interesting detail.
It's so interesting. I'm so glad you pointed that out. I had not noticed that.
And I didn't notice it until right now either.
Oh, and absolutely.
It's cool because you can see like the fur or the mane. Yeah. Of the leopard or panther or whatever is like carved down a few inches from like the top of the stool, from the top of the ottoman. And then like the paws, like the feet of the ottoman are almost paw-like, or they have like the furry texture.
That shape to them too.
Mm-hmm.
So this is Nikki back with an editorial note. I need to get out of the habit of just like inserting these in, but I got too excited in editing the next day after Sam and I are done recording this. So in the Marin quote that I had just given, we heard Joanna talking about how the character portrayed on the cover of Have One On Me is more of the maiden archetype. And so I just quickly Googled the maiden archetype just to see what would come up. And I think there are like a bunch of themes that are relevant to what's going on in the album that I just wanted to quickly read. Okay, so the maiden is traditionally defined as an unmarried woman. She's young, naive, free-spirited, and untainted by the world. She represents innocence, independence, and the individuality of childhood. She lets her instincts guide her and often experiments creatively in one way or another. Okay. She's also depicted often as like the proverbial damsel in distress, sort of like waiting to be rescued, like Snow White, like Rose in Titanic. So this article I'm reading here on creativescreenwriting.com says that instead of helpless, it might be better to use the word vulnerable to describe the maiden in modern storytelling. Because of her youth and inexperience, she's more vulnerable to danger, to exploitation, and to mistreatment. And then on a different website, so on knowyourarchetypes.com, I thought it was fucking fascinating that the primary example that they explore of the maiden archetype on this website is of Persephone, whom we have spoken a lot about because of, I mean, a bunch of different themes. So going back to Ys, but also on Autumn is the one that comes to mind in particular for me on this album. So I remember we got an email from the wonderful Kale, who first brought the Persephone connection to our attention. And so, yeah, apparently Persephone is the original archetypal maiden, which sort of makes sense. Like, she's the daughter of Demeter. She needs to be rescued by Demeter from Hades. Yeah, so I thought that was just an interesting little thing that I felt compelled to jump in the next day when Sam is hard at work and I'm just editing the podcast at home. But I needed to add that little tidbit. Okay, back to the conversation. Sorry. Also, did we talk about what those like wing things are that are framing the ottoman?
We didn't. I don't know what they are.
I don't know if they
are. They seem to be left in black and white too, right?
Yeah. Are they?
Like, there's some really deliberate symmetry at the front there. Yeah. Like the ottoman's in the middle.
Yeah.
You have the two wings.
Yeah.
And then the two deer fawn things.
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
and the couch and the tapestry. But then there's like the peacock on one side and then nothing to balance the other side. I mean, I guess
although the peacock feathers too.
Yeah.
And there's like also like roughly in the middle of the couch, there's those two leopards on the cushion or whatever that is behind her.
Yes. Which are almost perfectly symmetrical, like with the tapestry as well. They're like almost perfectly in the middle.
I wonder if there's any statement here-ish being made about like, because there's a lot of dead animals or like representation of dead animals in this picture. Like there's these disembodied wings or something. There's these taxidermied animals. There's this like pelt that she's lying directly upon. There's leopard fur, even though I'm sure it's not real, but whatever. It still depictions a leopard fur. There's the taxidermied peacock. There's the, there's just like a lot of animals. And so, yeah, I wonder if, A, that speaks to like that earthy nature that you were talking about, or like the like almost like animalistic versions of ourselves too, and like giving into these animalistic temptations, like sexuality at the expense of like thinking about your happiness or whatever, or thinking more long term. And then wait, I was gonna say something else. Oh, the way that we use animals' bodies being reflected at all in the way that men use women's bodies. I don't know if that's like a thing that's happening here, but it does seem like there's just like a lot of animals.
really are. And just in, like in the fabrics too, right? Like we can see some silks, we can see some furs.
Right.
Like it's in different depths of that use too. I'm sure there's like there's seems to be like a purse hanging from the, can I think of the word, partition on the right side?
The black and yellowish one? Yeah, totally.
And I know people lost their minds when Andy Samberg did like some interview or some thing recently where he had the partition on the right behind him.
Oh, yeah, with the bird.
With the birds.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense because it's just her shit she's dragging into this living room.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I don't know if I'm seeing this right, but maybe you can help me, Sam. So on the table to the left of the picture, it looks to me like there might be...
Left of the picture.
Yeah, it looks to me like there might be books that are propping up the lamp. Yes.
It looks like there's the lamp is on top of at least three books.
Yeah. And is there anything similar happening on the right? I don't think we can see because there's like shit in the way.
Yeah.
But I wonder if like the books aren't, it doesn't look like they were being read. They're like being used as a further prop to this.
Yes. And they're like intentionally, well, I think everything was intentional, but like vintage-y looking, like nondescript covers with like gold lettering.
Yes, yeah. I also, I don't think I mentioned this when I was reading her description of like the 1920s Parisian vibe that she was going for here. Mm-hmm. But one really noteworthy thing about 1920s Paris is like this expatriate theme of like, because there was like that whole writer scene. I'm really talking out of my ass here, but like that whole writer scene in Paris after World War I, where like a bunch of expatriated people would live and write in Paris after the war. And I was wondering about how much that fits into a theme of the album of like her being uprooted and like away from her home in California and like the vibes we saw on in California in Autumn and like Does Not Suffice to some extent, like of home, like the physical location of home really mattering for our narrator. And so this idea that she would be depicted in this Parisian place when like this album feels very distinctly like American gives it this sort of like upended, uprooted vibe that I think is super reflective of the vibe of our narrator in the album.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, I guess the idea that like home is a place where you're most comfortable, and that these are the things our narrator decides to surround themselves with, is really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I asked on Instagram earlier today what people thought about this album cover. Some things people said, very thoughtful always. You guys are the best. As dense as the album.
Ah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Someone else said, the font reminds me of deco travel posters and advertisements for like Monaco or something. And I know what you mean. That like style of travel poster from a certain decade. brought tasteful maximalism to the public eye, which I think could just be applied to like her music in general. The best. I love the opulence, love the stark contrast of her ghostly countenance and the lush finery that surrounds her.
Oh, I love the description ghostly to describe what she looks like on this cover.
Yeah.
She's very, very pale. And then like, as you had said before, Sam, that like washed out look on her face where it's all sort of just like one tone, not quite one tone, but yeah.
It is, because the only thing that stands out are the parts of her that has that have makeup, right?
Right,
like it's those heavily lined eyes and the lips, which I'm sure says something about like, you know, the face we put on when we are to face a certain demographic.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, no, I loved reading those.
You told me that our friend Ryan said that she got to clean up. It's messy.
Yeah, our friend Ryan said that room needs some tidying up. It's just like, yeah, you would say that, Ryan. What else do we have to say?
I don't know. One other thing I thought to say, that I found online in doing the research, is that Becca Mann, the painter who painted over Annabelle Moran's black and white photo, Becca Mann, the painter, did the backdrop for her most recent concert tours. So cool. If you look up any, or if you were there, or if you look up any picture of her most recent tour, the backdrop's this like beautiful, like, I don't even know how to describe it, like watercolory-esque sort of, it gives me a very similar vibe as the cover of Divers does, but obviously it's painted instead of like cool water photography. But yeah, I thought it was interesting that it's the same artist.
It is really cool that she's loyal to these artists who seem to get her vision.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
And again, I don't think we talked about the fact that this is a watercolor. I remember you mentioning that earlier and thinking like, oh, like that's so makes sense with the kind of like muddy interpretation of the original image that we get.
Yeah.
Like it's not as precise as a photograph. Like it's obviously incredibly detailed, but there's something amiss.
Yeah, that's a really good point that like watercolor is different than doing that in oil, because like also watercolor is like thin enough that it would let some of the like vibe of the actual picture seep through while still providing color. But then yeah, it's like not as, if you put oil on a painting, it gives it a much more distinct, like there are like sharper lines that you can do, whereas watercolor is a bit more hazy and blurry. Yeah, I feel bad describing this as blurry at all because it's like so detailed, and obviously the artist is like unbelievably talented and creative and just, I don't know, love her vision. I checked out some of her other work too. I'll link to both Becca Mann and Annabelle Moran's websites in the show notes so you guys can check them out, and you should. Like their work is incredible. Becca Mann's paintings are so fucking cool, and they you can see that similar style. I'm not sure if her methods are the same throughout all these paintings, but You can see that similar like vibe, the hazy kind of vibe that I really like.
Mm-hmm. Is that it?
I don't think I have anything else to say. I don't think.
I saved this screenshot of an article while I was at work earlier today, not doing work. So I don't remember what the source was, but they said, it's also interesting to me how different people describe the album cover.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like how your perspective shapes your description of it. So this person says, the cover finds Newsom swapping medieval symbolism for flapper-era luxe. Fans will ponder the stuffed fawns and chinoiserie for months to come. Gone are the intense studio orchestrations of Van Dyke Parks, replaced by the more varied input of East Street Band leader Ryan Francesconi. If the sound of air passing over microphones bookends every song, then it makes the music crackle with life. Yeah, just an interesting, like... Another one that I also don't have a source for because I screenshotted it says, featuring Miss Newsom lounging on a couch surrounded by a variety of antiques, stuffed peacocks, paintings, and animal prints. A previous leaf for the album containing only Joanna's name and the album title against a black background was only a provisional promo-only design. Yeah.
I agree with you that it's really cool to contrast the different ways in which people describe the album cover, because it is revealing about the person themselves and like what they're what stands out to them.
You know what else is kind of interesting is kind of like the dark space underneath each of the side tables and then under the couch as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's interesting that also interesting that she chose, or that someone chose, to cover her left arm that is extended. Like there's a pillow placed on that side, but it's not mirrored. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is. Maybe it's mirrored with a smaller pillow on the other side.
Like on the right side of the couch, you mean?
Yeah. So there looks to be like right at the legs of the fawn, there's like that a purple flower with shiny green leaves. That looks to be a pillow.
Oh, yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
But you can still see kind of like the empty dark space under the couch and then like the shady areas underneath each of the tables.
Hmm. I'm wondering, this is probably a stretch. This is probably not actually there, but when we were reading the description of the Grand Ode Disque on Wikipedia, they described one of the anatomical abnormalities as being that one of her arms was depicted as being longer than the other.
Mm-hmm.
And like, obviously this is a photo, so it's not anatomically incorrect, but it really gives the impression that one of Joanna's arms, her left one, the one that's like hidden behind the pillow, is longer than her right one because her right one's curled around and she's like supporting herself with it and holding a cup. But just sort of like, yeah, I don't know if she were intentionally trying to reference that painting in particular, then like that's a cool way of going about it. I don't think that's what's happening, but you know, connections. Our minds are interesting.
Yeah. And interesting, too, that they chose not to, like, alter the shape of her body in the same way,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you had said that, like, there were additional five or six lengths added to, vertebrae added to the original painting's spine. And, like, when you take a close look at it, yeah, like, it's a little wonky for sure. Not on first glance at all.
The Grand Odalisque you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this one doesn't seem to be. But that's obviously just because it's a photograph.
Right.
And versus a painting.
Do you have anything to say about the font or the typeface of the Joanna Newsom and Heaven on Me parts?
I don't.
Am I right that it's Art Deco-y? I don't know art well enough. And Art Deco-y was also 1920s-ish, right? Let me just type this up here. Hang on. Yeah, so interesting. Art Deco is a style of visual arts, architecture, and design that first appeared in France just before World War I. So around the same time as like the Paris 1920s vibe that she had explicitly referenced she was going for. And that it's French, I think, is really interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, it would be. Just because I feel like she would have connected all of those things too.
Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting. I had no idea that this was a thing, but that Art Deco was influenced by, quote unquote, from Wikipedia, the exoticized styles of China and Japan, India, Persia, ancient Egypt, and Maya art. I was totally unaware that that was a theme. Yeah. All right. Do you have other things to say about this beautiful album art?
I mean, I don't think so.
Do you remember first seeing it?
I don't. I remember that this album was really, really hard to get. Like, I know I was living in Montreal and I had to like special order it to like my local record shop. And that I don't think it's something I've ever come across in person in like a vinyl shop ever.
Yeah, I don't think I have either.
No. I think I've only seen the E Street Band. But, you know, that could just be my lack of, like, doing that very often.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you remember when you first saw it?
I like, kind of do. My very vague impression of it was that, like, when it first came out, like, Alicia and I were living together, so our mutual friend Alicia and I were living together, and I remember just being so concerned with finding a way to listen to the album, and it certainly wasn't by having the physical record. I'm pretty sure we illegally downloaded it when we first, because we were very broke, and I'm pretty sure we first illegally downloaded it. But then I remember, I don't know how long after that, Alicia getting the vinyl, I think as a gift. And I remember just this vague overall impression I got of it being so much more sexual than East was, because I remember seeing the pictures on the inside of the thing too, where like she looks like her legs go on for like days and she's like sort of like doing her hair, I think, in the pictures. Is that what she's
doing?
Yeah,
she's tying her hair. She's
tying her hair up, yeah.
In a series of three for each.
Right.
Final.
Right. So I remember that my impression was just a relational one, in that I was like, this is like a very different vibe from the East cover. But really, that's all I remember.
Yeah, and those black and white portraits that you're talking about are really interesting too, because they are a lot more pared down than the cover art. Like, there is still a leopard fabric on a small chaise or a small chair that she's like perched on the edge of.
She's on a chair. Sorry, I don't have the thing in front of me.
Okay, I'll turn it towards the camera here.
Thank you. Oh, yeah, yeah, thank you. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, so she's on, you're right. Oh, yeah, and it is so pared down, right? Like,
yes.
As you said, she's just on the edge of this chair. It's not the couch that she's on, not the divan that she's on in the cover. There's that, what is it, a leopard print blanket?
Some swatch of leopard fabric behind her, yes.
Yeah.
It could be the same one that's on the couch.
Right, right.
And then there's like a small nondescript pillow. There's a plant behind her. And like some curtains that are out of focus and a big, beautiful window.
Yeah.
The wallpaper behind her is exceptional. It's so cool.
Oh, and there's like, is it bottles that are up on a shelf?
Yeah, it's like a ledge and there's two just clear glass bottles.
Nothing in them?
It doesn't look like there's anything in them. Mm.
Yeah, that is really interesting that the inside images would be pared down like that. I like that contrast.
Yes. And again, she's wearing those incredible, like, short overalls that are patterned. But again, it's in black and white. Mm. And there's some motion to them, too. Like, the first one, her hair is down. It reaches all the way down her back. She has her hands up to her face. And she's just reaching for her hair.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the first vinyl. And the second one, she's twisted her hair. Oops, that's the back. She's twisted her hair. And it's working its way up. And then the third one, it's been twisted. They're beautiful portraits.
Oh my God, they're fucking gorgeous. Oh,
there's a carpet. Like, it seems like, I don't know, Berber carpet of some sort.
I like that the ones on the inside of the vinyl are still black and white, and they don't have that same, like, putting on a mask or a show vibe to me, at least, right? Like,
yeah,
it's still her being feminine and, like, tending to herself. She has, like, high heels on, I think, in the...
It's hard to tell because of the way that her feet are placed.
Yeah.
You can't see the heel, but they very well could be. Yeah.
But I like that, like, in those portrayals of femininity, she seems like a lot more, like, I don't want to say genuine, but, like, vulnerable maybe. Like, she seems, it's, like, less of a show she's putting on. She's
just existing as if, instead of performing.
Yes, exactly. Which I think
is, like, a really, really interesting point. Because the front album art does seem very performative.
Yeah, that's a good word for it. It does seem performative. Totally.
But like we said, like, playing a specific role for a specific person or group of people, whereas in the middle, she might have the same makeup. Like, it's, I think it's from the same shoot. Like, it's hard to tell because it's black and white, but it seems like her eyes are heavily lined.
Okay.
But, yeah.
She doesn't have that headband thing, the flapper headband, does she?
No, it doesn't look like it, but she still has the side part.
Sam is rocking a side part as we speak.
Oh, always. I can't.
I love the side part because, of course, I deal with millennial, but TikTok shames us for it, Sam.
Yeah.
Sam knows as well, but I have, like, abruptly fallen hard in the... TikTok has its grips on me, and I've been spending too much time on there. It was so fun to discover, though. It was this whole world of crazy that of captivating and distracting and interesting, which I found just in time to distract me for the end of my pregnancy.
And, like, very much in contrast to what we do here, right? Like, spend fucking 9 episodes or 7 episodes talking about a 6-minute song. Like, TikTok is the antidote for that.
It really is.
Like, 30 seconds of quick information that really doesn't matter and you probably don't need. But it's a great and very satisfying distraction.
Yes, although, and this is 100% just me trying to rationalize what I'm already enjoying, and it's fine. Like, I know that's what I'm doing. But, like, I will stand up for it a little bit in that, like, yes, some of it is just mindless, like, distraction. But also there's, like, really valuable content on there that, like, I get this, like, not belonging vibe, but this, like, people talking about these very niche topics that I am into, and then, like, learning a lot about. Like, for me, my TikTok is all pregnancy stuff, and I'm learning so much just from other pregnant people, and, like, there's, like, doulas and midwives, and, like, there's just, like, this, like, vast array of information on there that I'm like, no, look, this can actually be so valuable, especially when, like, for me, I don't have another pregnant person in my life, so, like, it's, like, this nice, like, resource in that way. I don't know.
And it is more personal than a TikTok, than a podcast too, right? Because you get to see people's faces, you get to see inside their homes.
Yeah.
It's, like, incredibly eye-opening as to, like, what other people are doing.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell people how pregnant you are?
I am 9 months pregnant. I am quite a bit
isn't that
pregnant.
Crazy?
Yeah, it's nuts. I'm so pregnant. So 37 weeks to be precise.
Yeah. And handling it like a champ. Like Nikki is killing it, showing up, doing this, looking so beautiful, like doing all the research. Like 10 out of 10 pregnant person. I can't wait.
Thank you so much. I do not feel that way. I spend way too much time like lying down and then like sitting up 5 minutes later being like, I have heartburn now that I laid down and then like lying down again.
Spend the time lying down that you need. You're doing a lot. You're growing a whole person. My God.
Okay, so how long have we been recording this episode? Okay, so
I don't know. I used a new recording app and it's telling me weird numbers that have nothing to do with the actual time.
Wait, does it say 2 hours and 45 minutes?
It says 3064 and I don't know what that means.
Okay, I don't know what that means either. Hopefully it's
We're at 3067. I'm sure it's fine. It's just like a different... It's telling me the bar and the beat and the tempo instead of the time.
Okay. So for me, it says 142. Well, it says 242, but I always need to subtract an hour. I don't know why Logic Pro is
like that. That's too long to talk about this. Can we get two episodes
out of that? That's two episodes, though. Yeah, I think so.
Thank you so much for listening to us blabber on and on about what we think might be happening in this album art. Nikki is going to include all of the artist information in the show notes, so please take a look at those because, you know, that's obviously the most interesting part of this. If you didn't know, we have an Instagram. It is A Hopeless Endeavor. Oh, shit. A Hopeless Endeavor podcast. We have an email address, which is ahopelessendeavor@gmail.com. If you have ideas about literally anything we've talked about, things we're going to talk about album art, about musicality stuff, we'd love to hear it. So you can send us a DM there or an email. Nikki runs our Facebook and our Patreon.
Yep. So I'll link to the Patreon in the show notes. It's just patreon.com/ahopelessendeavor. Same with Facebook, just A Hopeless Endeavor, Joanna Newsom podcast. When we release this episode, I will put links so that you guys can see like the photo shoot that we were talking about. And Sam said she's going to link that on the Instagram too. So if you, I feel like because this is a visual, we're talking about a visual medium, that it would be particularly useful for you guys to check out those links this week, if you can. I think that's everything. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.
And I guess the next time we're going to talk about diver stuff?
I guess so.
You put up a poll. What were the results of that poll?
That I didn't is a good look. Question. I don't know. When I checked the same day, it was people wanting divers next. Let me check right now again.
Okay. I mean, that was the original plan, I think.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad people said that they wanted to hear about the Have One On Me album art, because I was like really not sure that I had anything to say about it. So,
oh my God, the East album art episode stressed me out so much. No,
it was so stressful. Yeah, so 39 people was the most. 39 people voted for album art, then divers, and then the next highest was Have One On Me album art, and then Milk Eyed Mender, but that only had 10 votes. Mm-hmm. And like, we're not totally bound by votes, but if in the absence of any other deciding factor.
Yeah, I just don't like, I think if we're going to do an album next, we have to do an album and an album. Like, I don't want to do like a song from Milk Eyed Mender and a song from Divers. That's too much.
Yeah.
I want to, yeah.
Do the album.
Although I have been listening to a lot of Milk Eyed Mender lately. Very on board with that too. But the people have spoken. 39 people have spoken.
All right. We'll do Divers next, even though that seems like a colossal undertaking.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll do. Do you want to do like Make Hay?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But actually,
you don't have to.
No. I definitely want to talk about Make Hay at some point. But maybe at the end of Divers, just because I'll find myself wanting to talk about the themes of it. I feel like, and how it ties into, and like why she decided to take it out of Divers, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
Okay.
We can start with
anecdotes, I guess,
next time.
Crazy. Wild. That's so weird. Okay. That's what we're doing then.
Cool.
All right. Bye, guys. Thank you for being here and listening. We'll see you for Divers next week. Bye.
Bye.